You might recall that we're in the middle of a series. We started this year, in September last year, doing something called The Story. We're going to look at the story of God's plan to redeem his people. And between the months of September all the way to December, we were looking at the Old Testament. So the time before Christ, we've now dipped into the New Testament, the time where Jesus has come and he's left a mission for his people. And over the next few weeks, we'll be talking about new beginnings. Today, we'll talk about new beginnings for the disciples of Jesus, those he left behind. In today's passage, of course, he's still with us, so we're just dialing it back a little bit. But then for the next 2 weeks, we'll be talking about the Apostle Paul, formerly known as Saul, and his new beginnings. And due to some scheduling conflicts, Neil Graham will share about the end of Paul's ministry as he hands it off to Timothy, and then we'll go back in time for the following week when Jeff Peters from the MB Biblical Seminary will come and share about the beginning of Paul's ministry and then Paul's ministry as well. But for today's passage in John 21, we have a number of things going on. And one of the things that I want to ask you to consider and think about is the question, have you ever felt a little bit confused? Maybe even in the midst of that confusion, have you felt defeated? So that nuances a little bit. Now, I'm sure that the disciples felt this way at this point in the biblical account. Go back, if you haven't yet opened your Bibles, to John 21, verses 1 to 19. Go back and open your Bibles to that passage. And let's take a look from the very beginning. And I'll just give some context to today's passage. Jesus had died, he'd rose again, he appeared to some of them on the road to Emmaus, he visited with them in the locked room, and then he disappeared for a little bit. And what now? What were they supposed to do? And so we left off in John 20 last week, where he breathed on them. Do you recall that? He breathed his breath on them, and he said, go and do ministry in my name. If you forgive sins, they will be forgiven. So go into the ministry of reconciliation. Well, you fast forward to today's passage, and what are they doing? They're off fishing again. Kind of wonder what happened between the blowing on of his spirit on those disciples that were in that room and to today's passage. It's a little puzzling for both for us, and I suspect it was puzzling for the fishermen as well. They were just commissioned by Jesus to go out and do his work. But like so many of the things that Peter proposed in the gospel, it's probably a case of the right motivation and the wrong judgment. Again, Peter wanted to get on with life, you see, and like most of us, he wanted to do the next thing that was on the checklist. Well, what should we do now? Well, maybe go back to fishing, because you know what? There's a number of things that have to be taken care of. First of all, this was the world that many of them knew. A lot of them were fishermen. It was familiar territory, and what else would you do if you lost your source of hope and your source of a hopeful future, or so you thought? Maybe you would also go back to what you knew and what was familiar to you. Maybe you'd hit the default button. You know, you'd go back to that normal setting. It's just like hitting the rewind button for those of us who don't know what those buttons are. It's going back to the familiar, somewhere where we think that we might have a little bit more control and a little bit more predictability. All of us have done that. Now, it would be strange to go back to fishing, but these guys had families who also needed looking after. They had bills to pay, they had children to feed, and their families must have been tickled to have them back again after all of their adventures with this Jesus. And they might have well been suggesting that they should settle down and do something sensible for a change. Like, come on, maybe you should earn a little bit of cash. You know, like maybe you should go back to catching some fish, perhaps. So maybe they were pushed or prodded by their families to, hey, we still need to take care of home because, you know what, income's not coming in anymore. Judas, we don't know where the money's gone. Those 30 pieces of silver went back to the other people, and you know what? Jesus is no longer making a whole bunch of food for 5,000 people. Where are we going to get a living? So they went back to catch some fish. But the problem was, it didn't quite work out the way that they planned. You know, the interesting thing is that they knew the sea, right? The Sea of Tiberias, the Galilee, the Sea of Galilee. They knew this sea. This is where they cut their teeth in fishing. They got their ticket, their trade. They were veteran fishermen, and most of them, and they knew where the fish were, and where you could normally find the shoals, big schools of fish. And as in Luke 5, verses 4 to 7, they worked all night long, and they took absolutely nothing. They came back empty-handed. They knew as fishermen that if you don't make a catch at night, you're far less likely to make a catch by day. Take a look at John 21, verse 7. Just as dawn was breaking, the sky and the sea were filling with color, and they were stretching and shivering and feeling a little bit tired and ready for some rest and some food. Just at that moment, that's when Jesus comes again and makes his presence known to them. And like last week's passage, Mary in the garden, they didn't know it was him, but they soon did. There's a word of greeting and a word of a command, but sometimes people on shore can see better than the people in a boat where the shoal is. And so maybe Jesus was saying, well, I don't think you saw them, but I see them there. Why don't you toss your nets over there? And sure enough, they got a huge haul. And take a look at verse 12. Let's just go down to that again. Sorry to move around. But like the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, they knew in a flash who it was. You see them in the boat, jostling with elbows. I think that's him. That's the master. That's Jesus. Might have been easier for Peter if, as it happened on other occasions, Jesus had simply vanished and disappeared. But the thing is, he didn't. Go back to verse 4. Jesus stayed on the shore and he waited for them to come in. Back to verse 7. Peter, who longed to see Jesus again and clearly had unfinished business with him, he grabs a cloak. You know, he needed the cloak to stay warm. Smart thinking Peter, and then he just jumps into the sea. What was this guy thinking? And this time he leaves the others to do the hard work of pulling in the fish. Verse 8. Hey, we're catching fish. Oh, I think it's Jesus. Okay, let me grab the coat. Jumps in, walks off, and everyone else is like, where are you going? We're pulling in the fish. Come back here, you goofball. But where is Jesus in all of this? You know, it's a puzzle why these men went fishing. Just a while ago, Jesus had commissioned these same friends to continue Jesus' mission of reconciliation. You'll remember that from last week's passage in John 20. They are to work for Jesus. They are to be filled with God's breath, Jesus' spirit, and be sent into the world as Jesus had been. And remember, he's been training them from day one when he first said to them, follow me. I will make you fishers of men and women. Fishers of people, not fishers of fish. Yet they wander off, forgetting what he told them, and they said, well, I think he said, I'm going to make you fishermen. And they are there, back in the boat, fishing. And Jesus, where is he? He's waiting on the shoreline, and he's waiting for them to come in. Take a look at verse 12. What does Jesus say to his friends? What are the first words that he says to them? Come. He doesn't say, what in the world are you guys doing? Are you lame brains? Have you forgotten all the lessons? I've spent 3 years with you, and this is what you're doing. No, he says, come. What does that word make you think of? Come have breakfast. Come to me, you who are weary. Come to me, you who need rest. Jesus goes looking for Peter. The gentle shepherd knows that Peter needs him, and he knows that they all need him. The thing is, if they try to go their own way, he knows that they'll fail, and they will work and they'll toil all day and all night, and they'll take nothing. I think the only way is for them to admit defeat, to listen with open ears and open hearts to Jesus' voice, and to do what he says. And so Jesus says, come. That's one thing that they can do in obedience. The question is, what is Jesus saying to you? What is he saying to me? Yeah, think about that. Before we move on, let's just take a moment to listen to what Jesus has to say to us through this passage. And as we're standing in the boat with the disciples, just think about that in your mind's eye. Humor me for a moment. What is Jesus saying to you as you're sitting there toiling, pulling in the fish? And Jesus is saying, come. What does he have in store for you? Like the disciples, the fishermen who were laboring in the boat and getting nowhere, what projects have you been laboring over and getting nowhere with? What relationships? What are you clamoring for and it's just feeling like you're spinning your tires? What is our default position? What is it that we go back to that's so familiar and it's easy because it's predictable, it's controllable, we know what to expect? I want to invite you to watch for the dawn as Jesus got Peter's attention. He says, Peter, come. And suddenly Peter hears. I don't know how he heard over all that laboring and that water splashing about and the fish making noise in the water. But he hears Jesus say, come. Watch for that figure that's on the shore and notice that there's breakfast being made for you. And listen for his voice. But whatever you do, do what he tells you, even if it's just the invitation, come. This next passage is very interesting. Let's move down. I'm not a trained and registered clinical therapist or counselor, but I am aware of the healing of memory, the healing of memories, and the finding of forgiveness that can go back to a buried hurt or fear or failure or sin. It's tremendously transformative. I've experienced that. I'm still experiencing it. I've had the privilege of working with people and watching as a deep, unhealed wound was gently exposed, dealt with prayer and love, and then allowed for healing to happen and to take place. Some of us are broken on the inside, and that means that we can't see that kind of brokenness from the outside. We might look really good. We might look like we have it all together. We might even have some really good looks. I used to have better. Some of us have really good jobs. Some of us have nice fashion, clothes, and material wealth. All the trappings that make us look successful as our culture would define that. But we're still just hurting on the inside. Some of us might be quite okay, but some of us are hurting. And many of us wouldn't know that. Left alone, that hurt and that woundedness can become deep anger, which in turn just pickles into bitterness and cold resolve. I'm determined not to feel that pain anymore. And I'm just going to make it. Jesus can actually heal what's going on in there. And I think that's just one of those things that's happening in this chapter. Read with me. It begins with the charcoal fire. Now, John is very deliberate with his wording here. He doesn't just say any kind of fire. Jesus just didn't light a fire by the beach. It's a charcoal fire. Does anyone recall where we last encountered a charcoal fire and Peter? Where was that? Think back. This is where Jesus winds up being denied by Peter, right? Someone's beside Peter and says, oh, aren't you the one who was right beside me? He goes, no, it wasn't me. No, it wasn't me. No, it wasn't me, okay? as he's warming himself by this charcoal fire, and then suddenly he hears what? The crow. Jesus is very deliberate to light a charcoal fire here on the beach, and he says to Peter, come. Come have breakfast with me. Two passages bring us to this point. In John chapter 13, Peter insists loudly and emphatically that he at least will remain loyal to Jesus. Jesus, I am your biggest fan, and I am your biggest loyal guy. I am your right-hand man. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I'm not going to let you down, Jesus. I'm going to follow you wherever you go, to prison, to death, wherever, Jesus. I'm going to be there with you. In fact, in verses 36 to 37 of that chapter, chapter 13, he says, I will even lay down my own life for you, Jesus. This is Peter, the one who grabbed the cloak and then jumped into the water. The one who said, hey guys, I don't know what to do, so let's go fishing. The one who pressed the default button. Are we kind of like that sometimes? Jesus, I am going to die for you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. And then you hear that cock crow. And then in John 18, we watch helplessly as Peter tries and he fails and he follows. But when he gets there, it all goes horribly wrong. And instead of getting out quickly before worse occurs and fleeing, he stays by this charcoal fire and he gets it wrong again and again. And by that time, the cock then crows. And he realizes, what have I done? Three times he denies that he's one of Jesus' followers, and he's not just one of Jesus' followers. He is the follower, capital F. And then the cock crows. And it all happens beside a charcoal fire. Every time Peter sees this charcoal fire, he relives his sin and shame and his past, and he is so stuck. Do you have those moments where you think back, boy, I really made a fool of myself. Oh boy, I really messed up there. If I could only redo that, if I could only say that a different way, if I could only dot, dot, dot. Are you stuck in the past? Think back to the sound of the flames licking the fuel, the smell of that fire wafting through the chill, and you're right beside Peter and this charcoal fire. Think of Peter going out in shame, angry with himself. What have I done? And he knew that Jesus knew. And then he hears back through word of mouth what happened to Jesus the next day. And not even the resurrection could wave a magic wand and get rid of that memory. Nothing could get rid of that memory, except maybe revisiting it and bathing it in God's own healing. And Jesus knows this. And so he makes a charcoal fire and he says, Peter, come. I want to be with you. I want to have breakfast with you. By the way, I made it. You can bring some of your fish, but guess what? I've got fish ready and cooking for you. Oh, by the way, I baked this bread as well. And I want you to have it with me. Is that amazing? We don't need to take Jesus back into our past to heal us. Jesus didn't want Peter stuck in the haunted past. He doesn't want us stuck in our own pasts. And so the question is, do we need to meet Jesus in the part of our past that prevents us from moving forward into a new present and a new future? Again, we don't need to take Jesus back into our past to heal us. Do you know why? We need to remember that he was always there. He was always there. We just didn't see him. We didn't have the eyes or ears or heart that was open to recognize that he was there with us. He doesn't need to go back there in order to heal us. He already is. So we need to come to the realization that he was always there. We can ask Jesus to reveal himself to us in that past situation, that past event, that past memory, so that he can redeem it. Pastor Dave, what are you talking about? This sounds like weird stuff. We can do this. We can pray, Lord Jesus, will you show me that you were there? Will you speak a new word into my life? Jesus can indeed redeem our haunted past by giving us a redeemed memory. A new one. A new memory. Let me explain that for a moment. Maybe we're haunted by an old comment by our mom or our dad or something that happened in our life. Maybe a boss. This is just for an example. Maybe we heard the words, you're not good enough. You're not worth anything. Maybe it wasn't those words exactly, but you got that message. You'll never measure up. And maybe those words have sparked, you know what? No one's ever going to say that to me ever again. I'll show them. And your whole life has revolved around showing them. And you have become so successful. And in some sense, that's okay. But in another sense, it has covered up that wound. So much so that you're still broken inside. You've just gotten really good at covering that wound up with tape. Maybe these words have caused us great success, but done immeasurable harm to ourselves, to our relationships. Listen to Jesus' words. Go back and think about some of those events. And let him speak into your life, because he was there. Go to verse 15. Jesus calls Simon Peter by name. Peter isn't quite the rock yet. Peter in the Greek, Cephas, means the rock. But Jesus doesn't say, hey, rock, the rock on whom I will build my church, come here. Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus says, Simon Peter, come over here. He uses his birth name, and then he also doesn't forget to use the name that he's given him. Simon Peter, come here. Let Jesus call you by your name. Not all the initials after your name. Not the professional engineer, banker, chemist, doctor, lawyer, whatever title that you carry. Husband, wife, wonderful homemaker. Let him call you by your real name. Because he knows you, and he knows all of us. Do you remember who Jesus is? He is God incarnate. He is the one who spoke the universe and all of creation into being with but a word. And just whose hands made the sun rise this very morning. This is the Jesus who calls us. Whose breath guided us to think and pray and hope and love. Who is the Lord of the world? It is this Jesus. Fast forward way into the future, and it's on the day of Pentecost where Simon Peter becomes actually Peter, the rock. And interestingly, today in As Al has led us this morning, the church calendar marks the day of Pentecost, a day when there is a new beginning for the church, for the people of God, and they commemorate the Spirit, God's Spirit, Jesus' Spirit coming down in the form of a flame. And he comes down on all of his followers, not just the disciples who initially received it, but there's over 100 of them there. But you'd have to go to that story in Acts. But let's go back to verses 15 to 19, and we come to this most spectacular scene. The most remarkable thing about it is that by way of forgiveness, Jesus gives Peter, Simon Peter, a job to do. Jesus asks him three times, do you love me? You unconditionally love me? And Peter responds, I love you as a bud. I love you as a brother. I love you as a friend. Do you love me unconditionally? Jesus, I love you as a friend. And then Jesus says, do you love me as a friend? And Peter's like, oh, you know that I love you as a friend. And Jesus doesn't say, well, It's okay. I'm all right. It's all right. Don't worry about it. He says, okay, well then feed my lambs, Peter, and look after my sheep. Feed my sheep. The three questions correspond to Peter's three denials. So there's this healing time that's happening here. And Jesus takes the past and he overwrites it with something else entirely. These three questions serve as a reminder because Peter had denied three times. And in the midst of all that, Peter can still smell the charcoal fire burning. And a new memory is made. Peter's night of agony, as well as Jesus' own night of agony, they both return in a different form. But because of Jesus' sacrifice as the Passover lamb who takes away the sin of the world, because of his death on the cross and resurrection, coming back from the dead, Peter's sin is transformed. And it doesn't stop there. Our sin gets transformed. Well, so Jesus goes to where the pain is, and as he so often does, he takes Simon Peter away from the others. And they're probably walking slowly along the shore, and then Jesus asks the question that goes to the heart of it all. Do you love me, Peter? If you do, then follow me. So there's a new commission, a time to learn how to be a shepherd, time to feed the lambs and the sheep and to look after them, and then follow me. He doesn't make a big deal of, okay, I forgive you. It's all right. He doesn't say that. He gives him a new and fresh commission. Not only is Jesus trusting Peter to get back to some fruitful work and to turn his passionate yet shaky and stumbling love for Jesus into something even better, Jesus decides to share his own work and his own ministry once again with this Peter. So when Jesus gives us these new things, these are not things for us to just do in order for us to earn forgiveness. I want to make that clear, because nothing can ever do that. It is grace from start to finish. And there are things to do out of the joy and relief that, as Doug Rempel would say, we are already forgiven. And Jesus just wants to remind us of that. So we don't do things in order to earn forgiveness. We do things out of a thankfulness and a joy that we have been forgiven. And Jesus wants to remind us of that. So things we are given to do precisely as the sign that we are forgiven. Things that will mean following Jesus into suffering, perhaps even into death, as Jesus then talks to Peter and says, guess what? You've got some tough times ahead. And just as we prayed just this past week, more Christians have been killed around the world and perhaps martyred simply for worshiping him. Someone else will dress you and take you where you would rather not go, he says to Peter. And he says that to you and I. I wonder what that might mean for us. Peter will complete his task as a shepherd by laying down his own life. Indeed, he does that. And he lives out that first confession that he made to Jesus. And he does that for the sheep. But even this is not something different from the call that drew the disciples in the first place. And Jesus finishes this passage in verse 19 by saying, follow me. We're going to close very shortly here. Now that Jesus has taken the steep road to the cross and has proved that death itself is defeated by the life and the joy of the new creation, he can ask for everything from those that he's rescued. And he knows that he'll get it. So the invitation is for us to follow him. And like Peter, are we willing to lay down our lives for this Jesus? Peter went from strength to strength. He still made mistakes from time to time, as the book of Acts indicates, but he became a shepherd of God's work. He loved Jesus and he looked after his sheep. No one could ask for any more. But the thing is, Jesus never asks for any less. Thanks be to God.